Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Mr. Michael Morris. Today, we're going to be starting off our discussion by talking about the latest polling figures from the Social Research Foundation, as reported by The Common Sense. The full survey hasn't been released yet, but we've got some initial numbers from that Social Research Foundation polling, and it finds that the country's political landscape continues to change. In a survey of 1,002 registered voters with a margin of error of 4%, so do bear that in mind, and based on a turnout model of 53%, just a reminder that these turnout models and the modeling done by the Social Research Foundation was very accurate in capturing quite close to the final result of the election in 2024. The ANC has registered support of about 37% of respondents. The DA is on 32, and no other party gets above 10%. Mkhonto Sizwe's support in this poll has sort of just slightly almost halved in support, down from 14% of the election to 8% in this poll, although with the margin of error of 4%, it still could be higher. The EFF at about 7, the Inkatha Freedom Party at about 6. The poll also asked a variety of other questions about how South Africans feel about the various political parties and their potential leaders. 32% of respondents said the DA had the best policies, with only 22% saying the ANC had the best policies. 28% said the DA had good leadership, with only 17% saying the same of the ANC. 73% of respondents linked the ANC with the phrase broken promises, and 63% said the party only cared about itself. On the same measures, the DA only drew 3% and 10%. Cyril Ramaphosa in this poll remains the most popular politician in the country. However, whereas once upon a time his approval rating was sort of over 66% in the high 60s, it's now down to 38%. Of respondents viewing him favorably. Other ANC leaders were far behind. Only 10% view Deputy President and ANC Deputy Leader Paul Mashatile favorably. 18% view Fikile Mbalula favorably. 16% Ramakgopa, the Minister of Electricity, favorably. 26% said they viewed the DA's leader, John Steenhuisen, favorably. And 29% said the same about Helen Zille, DA mayoral candidate for Joburg. Zuma got about 21% favorability, and EFF leader Julius Malema got about 20%. 14% said they had a favorable view of Herman Mashaba. When asked who should lead the party, the most popular choice amongst ANC respondents, I believe, was Fikile Mbalula. But when all voters were asked, 23% of voters backed Patrice Motsepe, 19% saying Fikile Mbalula, 13% saying Paul Mashatile, and 9% saying Ramakgopa, and 4% even suggesting Police Minister Senzo Mbatunu. Mbalula got about 29% of ANC supporters, followed by Motsepe at 15% and Mashatile at 14%. So a lot of figures in this to unpack, Michael, but once again, I think this shows that we really have crossed a sort of threshold here. I mean, the first thing I think to note is that the most popular politician in the country only has about 40% approval rating. So almost no one is in the majority of the country's good books. That being said, it does seem like the ANC's sort of grip on the electorate is fast fading. What do you make of all this?
Well, I liked the piece is written, by the way, by our former colleague Marius Ruert, who was, of course, the deputy editor of the Daily Friend until he left to join the Common Sense, where he's the deputy editor there, and he has an MA in politics. His great interest in politics, and we miss his insights into these things on our side of the fence. But great to see him writing the stuff that he was always passionate about. And he begins by making this point that with the ANC and the DA almost tied, what we are seeing here is confirmation that South Africa is now firmly in an era of coalition politics. The point you were making too, Nicholas, about there no longer being this very clear dominant favorite figure. and the kind of one party style electoral landscape that has really been a part of our politics for so long. So I think that's, you know, that's very interesting. And to me, that and the various other the sort of detailed figures that you spelled out there also speak to is that South Africans are actually paying attention, and they do think afresh when things change and when they see things that are different, and when they see trends and when they see the behavior of different parties and different leaders, they do actually think afresh about these things. People are paying attention. I think that's a very, very healthy thing. And they really want to trying to figure, you get a sense, people trying to figure out who is taking our future seriously, and do they have the wherewithal, the policies, the kind of leadership capacity and integrity and all the rest of it, vigor, to actually go for it, to grasp the opportunities that are going to make the country a better place. And then the point that also in our pre-show chat, Nicholas, we've both shared the story, but something you emphasized about, you know, the narrative that has tended to be sort of hovering around the political debate since the GNU first came into being, that, you know, this is all really just a superficial. With the emergence of MK and EFF, what you're really seeing is a kind of shifting body of voters. You're really just part of the ANC camp. If they're not voting for the ANC, they're voting for the MK or for EFF, and therefore, ergo, you know, nothing is changing. It's the same gloomy story, and yet here we are looking at very, very significant shifts in that, or you know, contradictions to that narrative. With the two key parties, or the two parties appearing to gain the most confidence from most voters, registered voters, being the ANC and the DA, and both very close to one another, and the others dropping below 10%. So I think that's also a very significant point. I think, you know, measured optimism, I think, is always probably about the best where one can recommend for anything in South Africa. You don't want to be absolutely completely effusive and ridiculous, because there's always the risk that you're going to be contradicted. But I think there have been a couple of economic developments lately too that have reinforced this. But I think there is a sense that South Africa is taking itself a little bit more seriously. It's the voters who are doing it. It's the push from the bottom. That's always the most important, the most significant. And I think these figures are very interesting from that point of view. But I'd be very interested to hear your feelings about it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think one of the things that's important here is that what this really shows above all else is a sort of fluidity in our politics that hasn't existed up until now. With, you know, years ago, you could poll voters and, you know, you would see variance, right? There were times when the DA would go up, particularly outside of election times, and the ANC would go down after a particular scandal. But by and large, there was this sort of pattern that just kind of held. And that's no longer the case. I think voters, just generally, many of whom were formerly in the ANC camp, are sort of now floating around just looking for where they actually might want to support. And they sort of seem to be changing their mind much more regularly. There was, you know, I think this 2024, there were people who decided to back MK who are now having sort of second thoughts about that. The EFF seems to have slightly recovered from, I mean, we had some polling that had them as low as 3% not too long ago, and they seem to have sort of slightly pulled themselves up a bit there. But clearly it does seem like the ANC at this point is shedding a chunk of its voting block to the DA. Now, you know, when we go into election season, I'm curious to see how that sort of all holds up. And I think with so much fluidity, sort of unexpected developments when you actually get the election results are entirely possible. You know, some party that's currently not considered to be super in the running could do unexpectedly well, or someone could have a scandal that totally tanks their numbers, or, you know, you could see a lot of things changing. But I think fundamentally, the old dynamic has changed, And from this point on, we probably won't, at least for many years to come, have a majority party in this country. You know, will MK survive? Well, this polling result is one of the first ones I've seen that seriously suggests that MK was more like a sort of flare, you know, burning up bright and now sort of, you know, shrinking a bit. And I wonder whether that's going to be a continuing trend into the next election. And then I'm sure there'll be new parties, there'll be new major parties before 2029, which is the next, you know, national election. You know, with the ANC under so much stress, it's going to be difficult to imagine them not splitting again after their next elective conference. Whoever loses that elective conference is probably going to go, well, you know, we'll make our own ANC. You know, I think the local government elections are continuing to look interesting, but 2029 is looking even more interesting than that. I think we're going to see a completely different electoral landscape from what we've seen in the past. And you know, South Africa really will be, in a sense, up for grabs in 2029, in which I think it hasn't been up till now. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, that all sounds very exciting. And I think, you know, people are kind of sensing that too. You know, I've often said on the show that I've always felt that the great virtue of being in the GNU, especially for the DA, but for all the parties really, is the opportunity to demonstrate the importance of government and just doing jobs properly and being seen to be mature and accountable and so on. And it's not, you know, it's a long process and it's frustrating. And, you know, the DA is never going to be getting its own way all the time. And lots of people get cross about their appearing to allow certain legislation to go through without, you know, throwing their toys out of the cot or storming out. But none of those things are really necessarily the investment in the long-term future of the country. And we want the politics to work. The politics has got to work. There's not going to be any solution beyond the politics. It's got to, that's where it's got to happen. And I think it seems to me that the GNU in a way has given so many people the permission almost to rethink what they've always felt was true and who is the best party to vote for and who was their party, the party for them. I think often people have this quite sort of intimate mental association with a political party. It's the party that's for me. I'm at home with it because it's at home with me, and it's going to do things for me. And that, I think, is shifting. People are, you know, seeing all the more clearly. We've been saying it for years, but I think it's different for voters, especially those who've come from the tradition of opposition and struggle and so on, to see who really is serving them better. And so I think these figures, this is exactly what we're seeing. It's interesting you mentioned the word fluidity. I think it's very true. While I was chatting earlier, I was made this little note that nothing is fixed, all is flux. It's kind of like that. It's not quite, it's fluid is a better word actually, because it's not quite as wildly open to change as flux, and you know, all these flux might suggest, but fluid is good, and I think that's exactly what we're seeing. It's a very healthy development, I think.
One more point here that's quite interesting, I think, is actually Herman Mashaba's rating there. So you look at Herman Mashaba's favorability rating; it's 14%, so it's not very high. But that being said, you compare that to what Action SA actually gets in elections. You know, sort of like, what did they get the last election? I can't even remember, but it was, you know, it was a couple of MPs. And you really see that party actually probably does have the potential to be a sort of, you know, I would say like an IFP-sized party at least, if not a bit bigger, and that it hasn't actually been able to capitalize on the popularity of its leader. The fact that, you know, Mashaba is got higher favorability ratings than Paul Mashatile suggests that, you know, if the ANC decides indeed to pick Paul Mashatile as its next leader, I'm sure his favorability numbers will go up because there'll be people in the ANC who will just be like, okay, well, he's our guy. So, you know, we're rallying behind him. But man, it just suggests a bleak electoral future. I don't know if you have any thoughts on those two points before we move on.
Well, I mean, you're saying, and I think it's very interesting, I haven't heard anyone else really venture this idea, but that by 2029 we'd be likely looking at a very, very different political lineup. And I think that's quite exciting. And if you think since 2022 or 2021, I can't remember when the last elections were. It wasn't 22, 21, maybe the local ones in 21. I forget. Anyway, or 2019. There are all kinds of new talent and new ambitious figures have emerged and sort of pushing for careers in the business of directing South Africa, and to some extent they expose themselves to a kind of comical commentary because we're so used to there being the big parties who everybody must take seriously, but the fact is. It's often from the upstarts that you get new ideas, you get new leaders, you get new talent coming in, and they can be what's that term that people use these days, disruptors in quite a positive way. Very interesting.
It's those smaller parties, even if they don't succeed, or even if they don't always have really well thought out ideas, sometimes what they can do is they can sort of shape the narrative in ways that make the bigger parties change how they're doing things.
Exactly
as you say, as disruptors, and that is sometimes quite a useful thing. Although South Africa does have this habit of like having the hot new party, which does well for one election and then proceeds to fade away. We've had it, I think, every single election since like 2004, at least. I'm trying to think where there's been some grand new offering that. It doesn't do that well. I mean, you get everything from the ID, which I think for one election occupied that. You get sort of like 2-3% or whatever, but it sucks up all this air. And last election, we had a whole bunch, which which went nowhere. Anyway, let's move on to our next topic, because I could talk about this forever. Despite all the stuff coming out of the Matlanga Commission and the fact that the trust in the police just falls to ever lower levels, and the fact that so many South Africans are just quite frankly fed up with the crime situation in the country. Dumisani Khumalo, who is facing criminal charges and was the former head of the police's crime intelligence, has apparently been reinstated as head of SAPS crime intelligence, despite facing these charges. This is being reported by News24, who says they learned from two independent sources the decision was announced to senior crime intelligence officers during a meeting on Thursday morning that included the heads of crime intelligence from all provinces. He's not the only one. Four other senior crime intelligence officers who are facing criminal charges alongside him for the appointment of someone to a brigadier post are also returning, including Major General Filani Mushaba, the chief financial officer, who is facing separate charges of defeating the ends of justice and perjury in a case involving a docket linked to the theft of his cell phone, laptop, and state firearm by a prostitute, which is, I remember a story that happened a while ago, which is just, for that to happen to a senior police officer is just so embarrassing. But anyway, and all of this coming, as I said, we've got all the stuff coming out of the Matlanga Commission, but in a much more real sense, the Western Cape is going through a horrible tidal wave of gang killings right now. 400 people have been murdered in a month in gang-related shootings just in October of this year. And most of the violence has been focused in Mitchells Plain, Delft, Elsie's River, Hanover Park, Manenberg, Khayelitsha, Kraaifontein, Philippoli, those parts of sort of on the edge of Cape Town, the Cape Flats. Over the past weekend, there were 14 more killings across the Cape Flats and 16 murders in the days before that. So just, this absolute chaos. And when it's talking about gangs, crime intelligence is a really big part of that. So is it any surprise that, when this is what's going on at the top, this is what we're seeing on the ground? What's your take on all this, Michael?
I think that's a very good sort of concluding or summarizing remark. Contrasting the apparently self-interested activity that goes on with at the leadership. And it is worth mentioning that that apparently the senior crime intelligence people were cleared in internal disciplinary proceedings, and that's fine. This is as far as News 24 understands. So we aren't entirely sure of the details there. That's fine as it goes. But if you're facing charges in court, these people have been granted bail. It clearly flies in the face of just the idea, the sort of ideal or the principle, the convention of establishing the idea that there must be consequences for actions in government, especially in the police. Then doing this sort of thing is really cutting across that, contradicting it. And when it gets all the way down to the bottom, it either grants a kind of imprimatur to people who are misbehaving and feel they can get away with it because their bosses have got away with it, and it conveys to the community a sense that they are actually being abandoned. And this is absolutely awful. Both these stories in News 24, the story on the Cape Flats specifically, or especially most of the killings, as you said, Nicholas, are on the, right across the Cape Flats, a portion of Cape Town that was really created, in fact, by apartheid planners. These were all the suburbs that arose between more or less the late 1950s and the 1980s. Khayelitsha was just bare dunes and scrub until P.W. Buerta in a military helicopter flying over the Cape Flats said, why don't we make this area the area for black people to live when we lift the influx control measures. That was, I think, around about 1985. And today it's this mammoth suburb. So it's all those areas, you know, they have a history of abandonment, in the sense that these are often people who'd moved out of places quite close to where I live, Claremont, Newlands, District 6, and so on, out of the what areas that were declared white group areas. They were dumped out on the sandy Cape Flats, literally the flatlands of the fringe of the city. Cost them that much more to get to work. They were miles away from anywhere, no facilities and decent services for years and years. Gangsterism became a huge thing because kids had nothing to do. The whole history is too awful for words. But we're dealing with the consequences now, or we're not dealing with the consequences now. The consequences are still with us, and one of the crying shame here is good policing. You've actually just got to have really the best cops, not cops who are going to be drawn into the gangs. There's lots of money to be made, lots of influence. The gang economy in the Western Cape is huge. It reaches all the way into law firms and accountancy firms and so on. But in the policing also, obviously, there's huge temptation for police to sort of go off the rails and become contaminated. So a very interesting story that I was saying to before the chat, before the show, about how in the story about the killings in the Cape Flats, there are probably three or four different organizations mentioned and people quoted who represent these organizations. They're all civil society organizations associated with either with crime and safety or with community, helping the community in some way, but really all focused on the problems of crime and gangsterism, and that is a sign of people who are just so desperate they're having to do things themselves. It's under any circumstances, I think it's a very positive thing that people are getting involved, but I think in this particular case we're looking at a community that does feel that it has been let down very badly. So it's shocking, when you look at the contrast of the two stories here. Senior brass who are getting this apparently, seemingly softer treatment, and down on the ground, all these killings. It's quite awful.
It was interesting because in the story about all the murders in the Western Cape, there's this sort of focus on the police commissioner for the Western Cape, Thembisile Phathikile, and all these civil society groups, as you say, demanding a resignation there. What's interesting, though, is particularly responding to this concerning surge in murders, saying that targeted operations and hotspot deployments are being implemented, right, which is sort of the standard police line on a lot of these things. And it's just every time I hear that in our kind of policing thing, it always irritates me because, you know, as anyone who's knows anything about these areas has seen, every now and again, the government will come under pressure for these gang killings, and rather than make systemic changes to the organizations, we'll do these sort of flash in a pan, you know, oh, well, the army will go to fight the gangs. Yeah, we had that a while ago. Or we'll do all these raids, and the cops will swoop in and they'll arrest like a couple of drug dealers here or there, and they'll sort of do lots of patrols for about 2 months, and they just, you know, disappear away. Everyone gets moved back to whatever they were doing, and the thing just continues. And this is a feature not just of our policing, but of so much of our government's governance, of sort of showy once-off events rather than actual systemic reform, which is what is needed in order to fix this problem. Because, you know, as you say, we know that gangs have infiltrated lots of stuff. We know that gangs have infiltrated the police. We know that police are under-resourced. And all of this needs to be dealt with sort of piece by piece in order to actually, you know, fix these problems. Gangs are very difficult to get rid of. Even some of the world's most wealthy, well-run countries can struggle to get rid of gangs. And you need a really effective state to be able to do that. And this is the basics of what a state should be doing, right? At the end of the day, if the government is for anything, it's for ensuring that the basics of law and order continue to exist. And unfortunately, right now, on the Cape Flats, that is not being done by our state.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's a good point that, that, you know, gangs are not easily dislodged. It's a very, very lucrative business in a way, especially here in the Cape, with, you know, poaching, with drug dealings, with security, extortion, and so on. And with the province and the city that's actually thriving and growing, and a nightlife that's very active, and you know, so there's lots of money around, lots of opportunity to do things, but you're absolutely right. You know, it's got to be that systematic hard slog stuff where the right procedures are in place, the right people are appointed, the accountability is absolutely 100%. And then, of course, in addition to that, just as you were chatting, I was thinking about this. You know, the as far as the young people and families across the Cape Flats, I think they're better off perhaps in the Western Cape than other provinces in the country, but they're still nevertheless impinged upon by all the factors that we keep talking about in the national economic policy terrain that is, you know, undermining the country's success, the country's scope to grow, and the prospect of jobs and the prospect of better futures, all that sort of stuff, schooling and one thing or another. And so it all feeds, unfortunately, into this pathology.
I think saying that if everyone had a job on the Cape Flats, then, you know, there wouldn't be any gangs. I think that's far too simple. These things are always more complicated than that. And yet there is no solution to the violence in the Cape Flats without almost everyone having a job.
Yeah. And just, yeah, having that optimism, the feeling that a better life is on its way, that they are themselves being able to contribute to it, being agents of their own lives. It's all that stuff, yeah, that we're always talking about and how important that is. Yeah.
All right, we are going a bit long here, but let's just very briefly brush over our last story. City of Joburg revealed, I mean, we talked earlier this week about the City of Joburg paying, according to, I think it was Sunday Times reporting, I'm not 100% sure, when I wasn't on that show, I was obviously ill, but our colleagues talked about how the City of Joburg had apparently paid this huge payment, essentially, to some, you know, appease their demands in exchange for them not disrupting the G20, which, you know, really shows you where the priorities of the city are. And there's been this amusing story reporting about how the city of Joburg revealed that it had diverted 4 billion rand from Joburg Water to pay for other municipal expenses. And the Auditor General says that this is actually accounted for in the city's accounting, but this is tangible, not accessible cash. Following a question from the DA's Stephen Moore, the AG representative said the cash balance of the city of Joburg is less than 4 billion rand. What we know as auditors is that the 4 billion rand is accounted for correctly. So the books of the city, they do acknowledge they owe Joburg Water the 4 billion, in so much as in the books of Joburg Water, there's an acknowledgement that there's a figure of 4 billion, which is, can be owed by the city. A civil society group, Water Cans, executive director, Ferrell Adams, said that this is kind of crazy stuff. We're saying that 4 billion was swept and we are asking how was it used. We still to this day don't know how it was used. So telling us that there is an IOU from the city of Joburg to Joburg Water and Joburg Water agreeing that yes, you owe me, is not accountable. It's not how you account for what's been done. Just a thought on this one. You know, one of the ideas of creating these sort of municipal business entities, which would sort of, you know, do business with the city and perform its services like Joburg Water, rather than having them in-house and working directly for the city, I think was supposed to create a sort of more responsible governance, right? Because these companies at the end of the day were supposed to be able to be as close to profitability as possible. In this case, I mean, you know, where's the benefit? Because apparently you can just pass money from one entity to the other in huge sums and just be like, well, you know, we'll get you next time when we owe you 4 billion rand or something at the bar. I don't know. What's your take on this one? It's just, you know, the continuing crazy stuff coming out of Joburg.
No, indeed. I mean, I'm one of those people who doesn't necessarily believe that that privatizing anything is automatically a better option. When, you know, a badly run company can flounder around and fail and do bad things to people, in the same way that, you know, a badly run state entity will do exactly the same. But a well run organization institution is really what you want. And here again, you know, we see, I didn't know anything about Watercan. I've never come across Watercan before, but I suppose living in Cape Town, we're not familiar with these things. Ferrell Adam, executive director, this is exactly what we need. We need civil society to be, you know, forming these organizations, speaking out. She's very forceful in what she says. Companies, and they're, you know, all meant to do one thing or another. But still, at the end of the day, what you need is that accountability and somebody standing there saying that is not accountability. Which is what Ferrell Adam has done, and the DA, of course. I think yet another reflection of the general theme that we've been speaking about.
Yeah, just completely crazy stuff. And it's clear that you know, there will be no, I think, even token efforts before the next election to sort of, you know, spruce up the governance of Joburg, which to me suggests that the ruling coalition there is going to have a very bad election indeed. Maybe I'm being naive. I don't know. We shall see. With that, let us call it to a close. Thank you very much for listening. We hope you found the show interesting, and we will be back tomorrow with the Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone, and have a wonderful day.
The Daily Friend Show and the Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.